directions. And I think it's recording locally. I just hit the button. All right, well, welcome today to the Identity Implementers Working Group call for May 6th. As usual, we will go over a variety of happenings that are have transpired in the various working groups this week. And also for our presentation, James Ebert from Indicio has joined us, and he'll be giving a presentation on the new Aries Bifold project. So we welcome all of you that are in attendance now, as well as those that are in APAC time zones that will watch our recording later. Thank you for joining us today. Let's see, to start off, the antitrust policy basically says that we are an industry of collaborators, and we want everybody to collaborate and share for things that are open, things that are patent protected or otherwise proprietary. Please leave those out of this call, but let's collaborate on the things here that are of mutual interest, and I encourage your participation. Let's see, let me go ahead and share my agenda screen. And sorry, whenever I do that, it moves around everything. All right, and let me grab. All right, Sorry, I should have done this before. Let me copy that link and I'll paste that in the chat. So all of you can follow along. Please feel free to help edit the agenda page if I am missing some information or you'd like to add anything, that would be awesome. And also I encourage you to sign up on the attendee roster. That way we have an idea of who's attending and can reach you should the need arise. Let's see, by way of announcements, the next thing I have is the Hyperledger Global Forum coming up at the beginning of June. I've provided a link there. Does anyone know if that's in person this year or virtual or both?
I'm pretty sure it's virtual. I was part of the planning committee, and I don't remember that we had discussed in-person events at all.
Yeah, it is virtual for sure.
Okay, that's good. That makes it easier. I actually like attending in person, but I also like attending virtually because it gets more people involved that, you know, for travel costs and things. All right, any other announcements of things coming up? All right. Let's see, let's go ahead and dig in. Did anyone attend the main identity working group this week or recently, whenever that was? So they had a discussion. Let me see if I can find it. They had a presentation by Elastria, and it's a really good presentation. I've put the slides here on the page so you can grab those in a PDF format. What, in a nutshell, what the presentation was everything Elastria is doing, and they have a full-on ecosystem for self-sovereign identity. What all the members can collaborate on, permission, private blockchains, how the identity layers on top of that, and how they can compete with their various smart contract offerings and so forth. And it goes, it's like a national network. It's really interesting. And so the slides are there for you to walk through. So that was actually very good.
Steve, I had a quick question on that. I did attend a presentation they did on that, and I couldn't figure out why I never understood, I guess, from the presentation, why they felt the need to sort of rebuild and reinvent their own version of SSI as a platform instead of reusing the frameworks that were out there. That never was clear to me for what it was worth.
Yeah, so that's a good question. I see things in various parts of the industry where they're doing that. I don't have a good answer for that.
Right, Microsoft did that, and so I expect it from Microsoft. You know, they're one of the large companies that get what I call the Reinvent the World award every year for something they do. But I'm surprised that smaller organizations, especially ones that are potentially linked, you know, to anything that's government supported, would be doing something like that. But they did, and I couldn't quite figure out why they were doing it. Like I say, if it was Facebook, Google, or Microsoft, it would all make sense. But in their world, I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I was just going to comment that when I looked at their solution a bit ago, it was based on a lot of these decentralized ID tenants, but they did record for every individual an identifier on chain. So it's identifiable. It's not first name, last name, and that kind of stuff. But they did record an identifier that was that could ultimately be tracked and traced. So I thought it was kind of weird. But why didn't they build it on other stuff? I think they started, you know, many years ago in Spain. Is probably why they didn't use some of the like the indie building blocks and stuff like that.
Well, so you're right. I mean, I did ask the question, and the answer I got back was they didn't have an answer. They just said, well, we started 2 years ago. And I said, well, but those frameworks were available at that time. You know, the stuff Indie Aries and the, you know, I'll call it the Vaughn sample network because I did an SSI project for a state in the US. And when I did, the starting point was, okay, let's not only take Indie Aries, let's make it easier and grab the Vaughn sample network as a starting point and then work with that and try to, in a sense, modify that to be what we needed. And it actually worked. So the actual development team was able to do it in 90 days to get what we wanted up and running. But I looked at their thing and they were like, at the point, I think when I was looking at it, they weren't yet in production on the ID. They had it running, of course, and easily you could demonstrate it, I think, at the time I looked at it. But they'd been working on it for 2 years, and it was like, okay, so you've done something for 2 years that's sort of custom work when you had the opportunity to take something that was open source that we took and was able to get, I'll call it, our needs met within 90 days using, I'll call it, that starting point. And so it was very confusing because it's not like the starting point didn't exist for them. It did. And they chose to not use it. Let's put it that way. And they never really came up with a strategy on why, unless you're trying to build something that's unique and proprietary, more like a Microsoft, I think.
I'll wave my hands in the air as someone who considers himself to be a neophyte in this space in comparison with a lot of the folks on this call that have been doing this for years. And I admittedly have not. In comparison with other activities I've been involved in, my perception walking in the door, getting more involved with Hyperledger, getting more involved with decentralized identity, more involved with TOIP, is it's a relationship between standards, philosophies, and religion. And, you know, Microsoft's effort was driven by Daniel Buchner. He has a view of the world around Bitcoin, which I don't think regulated or highly regulated industries will buy into, but it's a Bitcoin will save the world sort of purism. And I don't mean that to be disparaging of him. I'm just trying to capture what I think some philosophies are. Obviously, those of us who go to IIW and know some of the players there, know some of the radicals and chaos theory thinking around some of the ideas they should be doing. Hyperledger Foundation overall, Indy as an example, have been putting forth efforts for mature, standardized approaches for enterprise blockchain applications that could be adopted by an industry segment and a regulated industry segment, respectful of things like GDPR and HIPAA. And when left to their own devices, people are still caught up in like, oh, we'll put this on Ethereum without necessarily looking at it from a regulatory standpoint, which to me only reinforces why it's so important that we do the things with TOIP that we're trying to do and get things documented as an architectural stack and point out privacy and risk considerations and how to standardize them. And I'm done ranting.
Well, thanks for the rant. I appreciate that. That's well said. And I think you captured it very nicely. I think the one thing that I see is, and you're right, the point you hit that's a big one to me in that whole thought was the concept of regulation. So you have in the world people who are 100% opposed to regulation in various forms and strategies, which is fair enough. Then the reverse of it is, I actually have a governance, a company working on, I'll call it blockchain governance in a sense. And their goal, believe it or not, is to go the other direction. They say that, what's the point? Why not lean into regulation as opposed to the Bitcoin model and say, okay, let's find a way to, as you say, work with standards and lean in and wind up with something that's, even as regulations evolve, you're what I call a short distance away from where regulators are ultimately headed on a lot of these issues, for what it's worth, you know, which seems like a decent strategy for investment.
Absolutely. And I'm sure many people here know, and as well as you, Jim, that's the foundation for Corda. If you've ever listened to the chief transformation officer from Corda from years back, giving a presentation, he said, when people make mistakes in our industry, they go to jail.
Yeah, actually, because I worked in that industry specifically in all phases of that. And it's a little more unusual than most industries. I'll call it financial services and securities and so on. It's highly regulated. And there isn't a reason, effectively, that you wouldn't want to, I think, from a business perspective, try to lean in a little bit more to regulations. And it's not like you know where this is exactly headed. You don't. You aim at something, it's a moving target, obviously. So it's not simple to say, these are the regulations that are in place. They're gonna be here for 10 years. That's not the case. But at least there is a way. And I think I'll say your company, I'm sure, is one of the ones that tries to do that, to say, let's understand where we are now. Let's understand roughly where we think we might be headed. Let's lean in the direction. And if we have to make adjustments, those adjustments are probably not gonna be major. They're gonna be something that we can probably live in without having to rebuild the world.
Yeah, you make really good points. One of the things that has come up not only in IIW but a lot of our industry meetings is this idea of interoperability, and I think that is really important. We started our work a few years back, kind of as Indy and that were getting started. And so we looked at doing, you know, do we put it on Bitcoin? Do we put it on Ethereum? Do we make our own token? You know, we looked at all those options. And what was really attractive to us was creating a bigger ecosystem for our customers by collaborating with people in the industry. And so that interoperability, I think, is a little different than a lot of things we've done in various market segments over recent years. And so you make very good points on that. All right. Let's see, on the, did anyone attend the Indy Contributors Working Group this week? So in a nutshell, where things are, and I put the link there so you can go to their working group page and get all the nice details. They are still working frantically to get the steward nodes and ledger systems upgraded from Ubuntu 16.04 to Ubuntu 20.04. And there's a lot of excellent progress there. And so it's getting close. Some of the things as listed here have been released or are in testing. And there's a couple of things blocked waiting on those results. One of the really important things that's come out of all of this is Ubuntu 16.04 has kind of officially reached the end of support. And so regular installations are not getting updates on that. And so what's been recommended by Canonical is to purchase their extended support package, which will give you like security updates and patches for the next however long it takes to get everything moved over to 2004. So like us, we run our steward node on Amazon. And so we were able to purchase a contract through Amazon to take care of that for us. So lots of progress, near deadline for release. But then there's the support package that's there as well. All right. Let's see. Any updates from the Aries community?
Making rapid progress on the AIP2 stuff. We're narrowing down to just a couple of things that need to be done. And so really good discussions there. That should be coming up for a ratification real soon now.
Excellent. I was hoping that that would have been done at IIW, but a lot of moving parts there. So we're really close.
Really close. I think we have two things remaining that will hopefully get resolved this week. So a lot of progress the last 2 weeks in particular, just ironing out last little details of things. And they're good things that are happening, but getting those ironed out, it takes a little while. It takes a process like a ratification like this to be able to surface a lot of these issues. And so it's been an excellent effort, and we're doing pretty good.
Excellent. Thank you so much for all your work leading that and getting everybody corralled so that we can get a standard. All right. Let's see. I didn't see a whole lot of updates from the agents' side of things. Let's see, there's some updates from Framework Go that I referenced a little bit down below. I always like to hear an update from the Bifold community, but since we have our guest speaker going to talk to us all about that, we'll skip that section for now in the interest of time, but I've put the link there for the regular meetings as well as the Rocket Chat channel. I would like to point out one thing that I really like about this group is that it's being built primarily in React Native, as I understand it. And that's a little hard for us to integrate into iOS. But what's really neat and worth monitoring about this group is they're going from the ground up on building an agent wallet and the associated tools. And so whether or not you can consume the React Native code directly, I think this group is worth watching to see how they put everything together, and that'll help all of you in your respective efforts do the same. Let's see. Oh, there was a question I had here as I was going through the Aries agent test harness. I saw a note on one of the working group updates that there's a wallet agent. Does anybody have experience with that? I hadn't seen that before. Or a mobile wallet, sorry.
I've seen the mobile wallet in use with the manual testing with the test harness. It's something I've wanted to do with Bifold, just haven't had the... haven't quite had time to do it, but I'm definitely looking to do that because it will help demonstrate the interoperability with mobile agents to enterprise agents. So it's quite a cool tool. It pops up QR codes as it goes through the process in the terminal, and it allows you to run through the process from the mobile agent and test to the manual back channel.
Okay, that's very cool. Yeah, I hadn't seen that feature before, and so that caught my attention as I was preparing the notes for this call. But I'm definitely going to go take a look at that. Most of our company's efforts is mobile, and so that's of a lot of interest. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any updates on Hyperledger Ursa?
Yeah, I think you captured in the notes nicely, Steve, since I did a lousy job typing in a chat. But Michael Plant turned me on to a discussion on Slack, actually, under the Sovereign Foundation around the last IHRSA meeting. And he was asking some really good questions, which I think you note there about, you know, how are we auditing, and the discussion between how traditional auditors can audit, you know, IHRSA or Indy IHRSA, Aries IHRSA stack, you know, versus cryptographers. And of course, recognizing that it's far too difficult to get things through a FIPS certification process with NIST. So what do we consider as good enough? And I think Michael comes from a financial services background in Montreal. And of course he has, as per our discussion at the start of this conversation, he has to sell this in a highly regulated environment. And they want to know things like, what are the certification standards against the crypto modules that you're using, and how do you do it? And I thought it was a great discussion as a former auditor, and thinking through those sort of things and maybe approaches that could be taken by Hyperledger as a whole. I can share separately, if anybody didn't see it a couple of years ago, there was a IEEE chapter that did a comparison of Fabric, Corda, and Ethereum against FIPS 140-2 certifications, just as a comparison between the three and the thinking to go into it. And I think it's thinking that we need to advance on.
Yeah, that's a really good point. They and that goes to a discussion we had in one of the working groups, probably 2 months ago thereabouts, about standardizing crypto or making it a little bit flexible for algorithms across the SSI protocols. And we are getting ready, if the schedule stays the same as I understand it now, sometime next summer, we may see post-quantum standards actually be released. And so there will probably, I would predict, be kind of a rush to adopt those new standards. And so what does that mean for our various projects? I'd asked Mike Lauder from IHRSA about that a while back. And there's a lot of interest in including post-quantum standards when they're finalized into IHRSA. So that will all become available to our community. But I think they're kind of, they're on the one hand waiting for the standards to be selected. On the other, they're still looking for volunteers. So that's what's kind of his response to me, is if I was real excited to see it in the project, that I had a compiler and knew what to do. So if anybody's looking for a really cool project, that's the crypto community is looking for builders as well. Let's see, some evolutionary things happening at Trust Over IP. I put the notes and the slides and the recordings in on our wiki page here. Couple of things of note, Good Health Pass is a full-fledged Trust Over IP effort. And so that's really very exciting because it takes the things that we're building in our industry and is spreading them out across all sorts of collaborators, competitors, governments, municipalities, the whole bit. And so that's a very exciting effort. We've talked about that before. Their website is on there. Any other milestones that are going on there that I've missed?
Yeah, what do you think, Jim? The big milestone is we're supposed to have an initial draft done by the end of this week, right? Of the recommendations.
Yeah, absolutely, Dan. I think it's impossible to overstate what kind of effort from the participants we had to get this together. And while it can be subjected to any level of scrutiny, the mere fact that we had so many people, some of whom just historically haven't been all that engaged at all, as well as just a whole bunch of people that haven't been members of TOIP, having these conversations, engaged, including over the weekends and weekend meetings, to wrestle through use case and hard questions that I think will only help advance the industry overall, much less, you know, specific to HealthPasses and wherever it goes. HealthPasses could fall apart and be a failure. And I think we've addressed concepts around just identity and passes that will be a value for the future, for going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the only other thing that I mentioned in this document, it's time phase, and that we're looking at the next up to 6 months, right? So that, because we know, as Jim was saying, there's stuff that's out there now, the good health passes. So where these health passes may not be so good. So we're just trying to accept them as, okay, we know something had to be done. So what does it look like in a month, in 2 months, and then ultimately in 6 months, striving for like the strategic view of a few months out. We know it can't be a few years out because of the immediate demand, but we also know that what's out there today is not interoperable, and it's something more should be done.
Anyhow, yeah, it's a great effort. I know for my own COVID vaccine, and yes, I know it's recorded. I'm admitting to private information here, but when I was vaccinated, they gave me a little card, and it had a little QR code on it and handwritten dates, and there's a lot of fraud with the current process. So digitizing that and making it cryptographically verifiable will be a huge leap forward.
Yep. Yeah, I guess you have us beat. My CDC card, and yes, I know I admitted recording, has no QR code whatsoever. So that's why people are printing them or buying them or just getting them blank and then writing it in by hand. Yeah, mine is 100% handwritten with no QR code whatsoever.
Well, mine is the same thing. I got mine last weekend, and same deal, 100% handwritten. So if anybody wants one, I'll just rub out mine and we can overwrite and put your name on it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's almost like a factory, the way mine's set up. It's just like, here's all the vaccination information. I'll just overlay my name with your name, and I can do 1,000 of these. Not a problem. So,
which speaking for the healthcare industry is the difficulty that we have now, which is, everyone believes in the concept of cryptographically viable digital credential concept. Speaking as an Indy Aries integrated stack with a major EHR system, with a major healthcare system, trying to get reliable information from state immunization registries and align those correctly with the right patients is very difficult, because we essentially have a 19th century immunization system married up to a 21st century cryptographic verification system.
Yeah, I mean, and it is true. I've worked with state systems, not on the healthcare side, but on some other ones, traffic safety and things like that. And the inaccuracy of, I'll call it, the reporting in state archives is phenomenal. So if you actually go through what I call a data cleansing activity like I did, you'd find out 60% of the, what they call the traffic safety incidents that are recorded in the state of Massachusetts, I guess it was 20 years ago, were 100% wrong. They only had 40% even in the ballpark. None of them were, I'd say almost none of them had correctly recorded the information, but 40% of them at least were accurate in terms of what I call the safety issues that were showing up. And the fact that you make decisions off of incredibly bad data, I'm sure probably hasn't changed and is even more important, I guess, in the healthcare space than traffic safety.
That's true. All right. Thank you for that discussion. I want to make sure we have time for James's presentation. So let's go over the other things, the other agenda items quickly here. Do we have an update from the DIDCOM working group?
Yep, just briefly, we have spent a bunch of time talking about whether we want to do key references or keys by value in the encryption layer. That was a good discussion this Monday, and it will be a rousing discussion, I'm sure, this next Monday with an issue to carry on the conversation in the middle.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Let's see.
So if I could ask on that, you know, one of the things we've been doing in the formats group of the Good Health Pass Collaborative is around that, where we separated presentation protocols versus issuance protocols, and ultimately I think we're going to recommend JSON LD with BBS plus, but also this wacky protocol. So can you, I know you're trying to give that update really fast, Sam, but how does that fit in with your DITCOM and the key exchange there? What should we be making updates to the recommendation, I guess? Where does that fit in? You know, this key exchange that you're talking about.
Well, the specific thing that we're discussing is whether the sender keys are actually represented by value or by reference. And there's implications of both specific way. And this is just specifically in the DIDCOM encryption envelope itself, independent of the actual payload passed.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. So there's weird trade-offs between efficiency and then reliability. And whether you're considering offline use cases or not, and there's a handful of things there. And so it's a pretty rousing discussion with lots of opinions. Historically, DIDCOM has been keys by value. And we were planning to keep that until it was brought up again. And so we'll be discussing that further. One of the advantages I'll mention on DIDCOM V2 that we're working on is that there is no longer a DID exchange protocol necessary. The first message sent to the other party can both contain semantic, an actual message, a semantically meaningful message, and all the information that the receiving party needs to know to reply. And we worked really hard on that. And there's some really cool side effects of being able to do that. One of which is that you don't have to talk before you talk, meaning you don't have to do any sort of back and forth deep handshaking protocol before things actually happen. It can happen alongside meaningful messages that are being passed.
Okay, cool.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for that overview. All right, the rest of the items on the agenda here from the Sovereign Foundation, these are meetings we actually talked about before, so I won't go over them now, but I did put the links in the chat. And part of the big thing that's being talked about that I mentioned at the outset of the call is the Ubuntu 16.20 upgrades on the steward and ledger nodes. So with that in mind, at this point, I've invited James Ebert from Indicio to come talk to us about the Bifold project and kind of give a status demonstration and overview of that project. James, are you ready to go?
Yes. Let me go ahead and share my screen. And want to say that if you have questions or comments during any of the presentation, feel free to jump in. I would love to answer any of your questions on the project and the efforts here. So. You can either just raise a hand or just jump in. So Aries Bifold. I think first talking about the motivation of why we're doing this is a really good place to start. We really wanted to create a community around an open source mobile app and library that is providing SSI capabilities in a React Native context. And more importantly is the community part, because we wanted to establish this a stronger effort around mobile agents from a open source perspective. If you look at Akapai, for instance, that's a very strong effort going forward on the enterprise side, but the mobile pieces are more fragmented, and we wanted to establish a create a community to compile our efforts and tackle difficult issues. We also wanted to make SSI more accessible to the broader developer community. That's part of why we're doing this in an open source perspective as well. Some of our main goals around this is establishing this community, and we want to provide a widely usable, production-ready, open-source mobile agent and tools to create a mobile agent. Something we want to do is focus on the UI and UX experiences from a mobile perspective, and problems there that haven't necessarily gone, haven't been addressed or some implementations are often done by developers and are not necessarily built for the end user. So that's something that we wanted to do, is help tackle those issues. We wanted to have a project that allowed us to experiment with new ideas and capabilities. So for instance, there's types of protocols that we may want to do, but without having a good place to quickly implement and test these ideas, that can be more of a difficult process. And one of our other main goals, I would say, is that we want to work with the community in a interoperable way. This is important. From my point of view, this is quite important, so that we're not adding yet again one other app to the ecosystem, but benefiting the community as a whole in a greater way. So, questions so far on our goals and the motivations behind the project.
Looks really cool. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So current status, as of right now, we're at Android and iOS feature parity, and we're working towards a 0.1 features, which has a couple of main pieces here to essentially get us to a baseline. This is being able to do your standard connections, credential issuance, presentations, revocation, and messaging. Connections and credentials are complete. We're quite close on presentations. Revocation, the functionality is there. However, we're not currently supporting one of our goals of the UI side of things. And so this is why this is part of one of our 0.1 features, is that we want to, for instance, do a revocation notification to allow for the better end user experience. And messaging is in progress. So, Daniel, did you have a question?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I was looking for the raised hand. Yes. Yeah, so on the revocation, maybe you just answered it, because revocation is like an issuer action. But so I was going to ask, what does this have to do with mobile? But you may have just answered it. And that's if an issuer revokes a verifiable credential, you're saying that the notification would, you're working on the notification of that revocation.
Correct, because it's quite a jarring experience to, let's say you have a credential for accessing a building, and you try and go scan you try and utilize your credential, and that's when you figure out that it's been revoked. That's a not a smooth user experience, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. But yeah, but okay, so you clarified it. So it's not a revocation function, it's a revocation notification function, right? Okay, got it.
Yes, yes. So gonna jump into a brief demo of where we're at. There is much to do, but I'm already excited about the progress we have made. Here I have a Android screen that I'm, or a Android phone that I'm screen sharing currently, as well as I've booted up the Aries toolbox using AcaPy to act as an issuer. So as it is currently configured, the Bifold app has steps for registration. Currently, this is utilizing fill or text so that you would be able to white label and place whatever agreements in here that you need. There's also capabilities to add additional steps in the registration here. So adding information of you want to collect their name to be able to issue them a credential in relation to their name or their email or other sorts of things. We have to get to the point where the user gets to the point where they need to create a PIN. One of the things we want to do here is biometrics, obviously, but starting with PIN to get to a good baseline. This drops us into the main screen. And there, from my point of view, needs to be some additional work done here, but it's a step in the right direction. Our main interaction points is contacts, taking a look at what contacts we have available, or we've connected with, I should say. Currently, we have the mediator that we're set up with. And then we have our credentials. Currently, we do not have any credentials. So what I'm going to do is, our other option is to start a interaction. So QR code scan. So I'm going to head over onto the toolbox side of things. And I have already generated an invitation. So we're just going to pop that up. So this has connected on between the two. At this point, the agent is waiting for the credential issuance. It is assuming that we are immediately issuing after that connection. So that is an area that we will want to revise in the future. I've generated this driver's license schema to demonstrate the issuance capabilities. So I'm just gonna go ahead and issue that. And John Doe is really old. And we can see that on this side, we've received this offer and we can see who it's come from. And we can see what they are, the details of this credential. And we can claim this credential and this will accept this and place it into our wallet in which we can view the details and we'll be able to present and utilize this credential. This is the point at which the app itself has gotten to. We have a number of in work items, but this is the demo. Questions from the demo.
No questions, but it certainly is awesome to see that this thing actually can work easily in React, their point. Look forward to, in a sense, as you move forward, getting updates on it. It's really a big deal for us anyway. Thanks.
Yeah, so you went through a quick, cool demo, where you selected credential definition. So you had a predefined credential definition for a driver's license, it looked like. And when you selected that, because it went through, And that defined what fields were going to be requested, right?
Correct.
Okay. And so just like, I guess, the normal stack. So those credential definitions are on chain or?
This has been configured to utilize the Indicio testnet ledger. It could utilize the sovereign staging. It's configurable which ledger you utilize. You just have to point it to the right Genesis files. So I did that as well as I did incrmidid and create the schema and credential definition in preparation for the demo.
Okay, nice. You went through it so quickly. Yep, good, cool.
I've got a quick question on the, you mentioned at the beginning about authenticating via biometrics. Mm-hmm. Is the plan to take advantage of the biometric capability of the host device or to provide another type of authentication service?
I don't think we've finalized what we want to do on that front. I think the my inclination is to utilize the on-device capabilities, and that's what we've investigated so far. But I think that's one area we're open to suggestions or feedback on that. So
one of the easy areas that I think we could do stuff, Steve, is allow you to connect with and then engage in some sort of verification, liveness check, et cetera, with some provider. So that wouldn't be really baked into the Bifold project itself, but could certainly engage with some other provider there to do kind of whatever's necessary. And there's a little squishiness there because that stuff is typically baked into the software. But in this case, the Bifold project is trying to be this open source thing that can be usable in lots of circumstances. So it's a little bit more, we got to be a little more careful on how we architect that in, but that would be a wonderful way of doing that.
Yeah, I like that. There's a couple of trade-offs there. I'm not as familiar recently with the Android side, but on iOS, it's a service that you can connect to within the device. So where Apple controls all the, how they shine the 30,000 dots on your face and use that for authentication. That's a service that you can connect to. Apple will still control that. And so the apps wouldn't get access to the raw data, but you could get a response back from Apple about whether it succeeded or failed authentication.
Yeah, and certainly the device based authentication is the easiest one to engage with, and that will be unique to the mobile platform you're on. Something that results in your wallet actually having a credential that of some verification is the further step that I was talking about.
That seemed to come out of, right? Wasn't there an authentication method within the DID spec at one point, and that kind of got removed? A biometric authentication option, if I remember correctly, and it got removed from the
I'm not the most authoritative person to speak on this. What I do know is that the biometrics is one of those things you got to do right or else it's more horrific. And so I think there's lots of caution around it, and there was a reluctance to sort of bake stuff in when the broader community was not yet convinced that that was the exact right answer. But to my knowledge, it has not really been excluded. And I definitely think particularly it will play a role in some really important ways as we advance the technology. But I think having it baked into stuff like the DID spec itself, may not be the exactly the right place to put it at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd offer from a healthcare perspective, I see biometrics as being inevitable, and no question. And Dan knows this very well from his work in the past on biometrics. But there's just ground truths that you can only really secure in biometrics and how you manage those biometrics. Setting aside the challenge of doing that, particularly from a healthcare perspective, where we're batting around the challenges of effective, you know, 863 type LOAs with near 100% patient identification and patient matching for, you know, procedures and medicines and stuff like that. So I think it's got to be considered in the future.
Oh, it totally will be, right? It's the other thing that I think has driven reluctance to bake it into like the did doc layer is that technology is going to rapidly improve, we think, at a more rapid pace than the actual underlying spec. And so decoupling those allows for the more rapid innovation in the biometric space than if you tie it too closely to some spec that then is really difficult and rigid to change.
Yeah, well said.
Awesome. I'm thank you for the thoughts on the biometrics. It's a very interesting area. So a look at the tech stack that we're utilizing here. So React Native, the reason why we chose, at least some of the reasons why we went with React Native was it's a large adoption. The multi-platform support, as well as the accessibility and ease of use. So essentially we have four different pieces. Starting from the bottom, I suppose, is the easiest way to view it. We're utilizing libmd currently, and this is being exposed in a React Native context. We're utilizing Aries Framework JavaScript to provide our agent capabilities, and this is which means that Aries Framework JavaScript can exist in a enterprise context as well, but this means that we're not having to duplicate our efforts between multiple areas when we can just combine our efforts behind one JavaScript framework. And then there's essentially two different pieces. They're currently mostly one, with the effort of moving and separating them into two. But there's two different pieces. There's the actual app itself, which I just demonstrated. And the idea with that is that this is clonable, and you would be able to white label this to start a new SSI project. Or you can utilize the data components and default UI components as desired to integrate into an existing React Native application. That's really powerful, so that you can, we can contribute changes back up, and you can get improvements as they come versus having forked away from the original app that you cloned. So that's the major components involved. Questions or clarifications on the tech involved? Awesome. This is a fairly long list, and I think we're fairly short on time, but these are some of the things that we're trying to go after. I just touched on the componentization, so being able to utilize within existing applications or clone and white label. We're working on mediation support, allowing us to work in an interoperable way in terms of mediation. Authentication, we talked about that already. Something we're looking at doing is multi-ledger support. So allowing the user to be issued and utilize a credential that is across multiple ledgers. So able to utilize a credential from staging on Sovereign or on Indicio's testnet, and it would be able to do that under the hood and configure that for you. So from an end user perspective is quite beneficial, a smoother experience, I should say. And there's two mechanisms of doing that. There's the interim solution of pulling multiple ledgers, and then the better solution of utilizing DidIndy to identify that. We are looking, we're working on push notifications for mediation. Governance frameworks. I have a lot of interesting things to say on machine readable governance frameworks. Currently we're based off of Indy, but we want to do other formats, BBS Plus in the future, working on internationalization to help that user experience. And a number of other things here, but in the effort of time, these are the contributors currently involved. Indicio, we're working on coordinating the work and pushing the efforts forward. Animo did some initial efforts and their ongoing contributions, so we've really appreciated their efforts. And ABSA has done pieces at RNND SDK and the Aries Framework JavaScript level, as well as others that aren't necessarily named here. So here are the project links. So this is the main repo and the underlying tech. And this is how you can participate and join. We have bi-weekly meetings and user group meetings where we discuss the project and next steps and work items and move the project forward. So really excited where things are going. I think we're mostly out of time, and unless there's any other last minute quick questions.
Thank you for that presentation and overview of Bifold. That's an excellent project. I remember when it launched here not too long ago, and to see this kind of progress, that's really impressive. I look forward to seeing you realize all those things on the where we're going list that you had up.
Mm-hmm. If we could get all those things, that would be that would be awesome. So.
Definitely so. Well, as you make progress down that list, we'd love you to have you back on this call to give us an update. And thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come and give us this presentation. Really appreciate it. Well done.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. And so that will conclude our Identity Implementers Working Group call for today. For those of you still on the call or listening remotely, if you would like to give a presentation in future meetings, just reach out to me. I'm Steve McCown. I'm McCown on Rocket Chat, and then you can find me on Slack as well, and love to have you present. Thank you very much.
Thank you.